Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started. You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, it is a Friday. It is great to be here live in Los Angeles. It's The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1 on Fridays, as is customary. Blazing 5, top of next hour. Great to have you in today. Nice Thursday night football game. Tonight, Suns Warriors, biggest regular season game, one of them of the year. Joy Taylor, how are you on a Friday?
I am great. I'm looking forward to this weekend. And probably the game of the weekend, Bills-Patriots.
Monday night. That's going to be gigantic. So, Taysom Hill had 4 interceptions last night.
I watched. I saw, yeah.
Yeah. So, let's start with that. So, I know Sean Payton loves Taysom Hill. And I know Sean Payton knows a lot more about football and Taysom Hill than I do. But about 15 years ago, the great American investor Warren Buffett, much smarter than me, much better at investing than me, invested heavily in local newspapers. And I went on the air as somebody who's played around in the stock market, and I said on the air, that's a terrible investment. And I was right, and he was wrong. Doesn't mean I'm smarter. Doesn't mean I, you know nearly as much on his worst day as I do on my best day. But smart people who are thought of as experts, they're wrong all the time. The key is don't double down on it. Smart people can get stubborn. Smart people can surround themselves with yes men. Smart people get rich. People are intimidated telling rich, powerful people what to do. You can believe in your own press clippings. I don't know as much as Sean Payton. Taysom Hill's not a starting franchise quarterback in the NFL, period. He's a gadget guy. Now, you can love his athleticism. You can love his heart. You can love his speed. I'm not denying he's an NFL football player. But there are 20 quarterbacks today in a bad college quarterback class that throw a better ball than Taysom Hill. And a big part of being quarterback is being able to play from behind when everybody knows you have to throw. How did that look last night? When Taysom Hill has to throw and you don't buy into the run fakes, he's terrible. And you saw it and I saw it. And Warren Buffett, as smart as he was, he didn't work in the media for 20 years like I had. Local newspapers weren't going to rebound. They're all broke. New York Times is fine. Wall Street Journal's fine. And local newspapers aren't. Listen, in a tight salary cap league, if you're paying Taysom Hill 4 years, $40 million minimum, potentially 90 if he plays a lot, it won't get there. That's just arrogance. That's just, I know more than you. That's Josh McDaniels when he coached the Denver Broncos and saying, I'm going to draft Tebow. Of the half dozen NFL scouts or executives that I talk to pretty frequently, they all laughed at it. They're like, Tim Tebow's not a first-round quarterback. Tim Tebow, at best, is a third-string quarterback in the NFL. He is a less athletic Taysom Hill. So that's just arrogance. And by the way, a lot of coaches have success in this league. And then they get arrogant. Bill Belichick got a little arrogant, and then Brady left, and he got humbled. They had to spend $300 million in free agency because he took control of the draft for about the last 7 years, and he whiffed on tight ends, and he whiffed on receivers. He whiffed on a lot of players, and then he was humbled. And instead of being stubborn, Bill Belichick went, all right, I'm going to hand the draft part back over to my scouts. And I'm still going to seek value a ton on free agency. He acknowledged that as a brilliant football coach, he wasn't brilliant at everything. It's why, by the way, I've been doing this for 30 years and I still read Twitter. And for years and years, I read email. You get great ideas from people. You should tweak your show every year if you're a radio host. Sit down, talk to your producers. We don't have all the answers. Sometimes your answers are better than our answers. And I don't know more football than Sean Payton, but that's not a franchise quarterback. Once you take out the running fakes and he trails 2 touchdowns late, come on back and win. That's a marginal college quarterback who's super athletic. Here's Sean Payton, though, doubling down after.
Man, I thought he played with a lot of heart, a lot of guts. You know, we didn't help many in the first half. You know, I'll be honest with you, we got to catch that first interception. We got to, it's the perfect coverage look we get. We drop a ball, they make a good play on it. That's unfortunate.
Heart and guts is exactly what Tim Tebow's biggest fans always cling to. Oh, his heart, his guts. That doesn't win football games. Throwing a 39-yard seam route, trailing by 14 points, 4 minutes left. Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen. That wins football games. Heart and guts are great if you have all the other components of a franchise quarterback. I like Taysom Hill. I'd love him on my roster. That's not a franchise quarterback. All right, so the Cowboys won last night, and as I'm prone to do, I kind of watch the internet to see your reaction of it. And everybody's like negative, and Dak this, and Kellen Moore that, and I'm like, all right, sometimes get out of the emotion, just go to the box score. Dallas had fewer penalties as a road team. Dallas had far fewer turnovers. Dallas had 380 yards of offense, 6 yards of play, 150 yards rushing. What are you complaining about? When you get to December football, injuries, backups, fatigue, short week, they were missing like five or six coaches and staff on the road against the great defense. Tough place to play against the Hall of Fame head coach. And they won by 10. Who cares what it looks like? Well, Colin Dak, he's very inconsistent. Yeah, since day one. Well, I mean, Tony Pollard is better now than Zeke. I agree with that. And that's a bad thing. To have a great backup quarterback who's a running back that's a playmaker, that's a bad thing. Well, Kellen Moore's play calling, yeah, it was a little inconsistent. Folks, 17 games. Play callers can't have bad weeks or bad halves. Are you a salesman? You ever had a bad presentation? I've had a bad segment. Does Kellen Moore have to be perfect for 17 weeks? Let's look at the facts. Dallas is 8-4. Dallas plays only one team with a winning record to finish the season. Dallas is going to win the division easily. Dallas is in first place. Dallas is getting healthier at key spots. That's all the good news. Dak's not a pretty thrower. Dak's never been a pretty thrower. It's why I had my reservations and still do giving him $40 million. I think quarterbacks come in two camps. The big bag and the smaller bag. And I think Dak on most Sundays, because in the NFL on most Sundays, you're missing a wide receiver, you're missing a center, you're missing a running back. Dak, when everything's right, is a big bag quarterback. But it's mostly not, especially in December. And am I concerned that Dak, who's not an artistic thrower and never has been and never will be, does appear to at times really struggle without Amari Cooper? Yeah, we talked about that yesterday. And Amari Cooper's not right. He's out of COVID. He's not right. He looked winded early. Give him about 3 weeks. He'll be fine. The good news is they should be able to win these games against teams like Washington, Philly, and the Giants going forward. Yes, this is why I had my reservations with Dak. And I do not believe Dallas is a Super Bowl team. But they're going to win their division. They're in first place. They won by 10 on the road, missing staff, against a really good defense and a Hall of Fame coach. They got 4 turnovers, 4 picks. There's nothing to complain about. You ever notice this? How pretty September and early October football is? It's 74 degrees. And have you ever noticed it gets uglier in December? Backups, fatigue, short week. Guys are hurt. Now we got throw in COVID, which didn't exist until last year. So you're missing staff members. Last night, we predicted yesterday on the show, Dallas wins by 10. It was 27-17. I said 30-20. They'll win by 10. I came out of it thinking, yeah, it's a little choppy. Win by 10 on the road. Who cares? We get way too caught up on December football being attractive. It's not all the time. Dallas is not as good as the team that was 6-1 that I bought into. They're not nearly as bad as the team that got housed by Denver. They don't feel like a Super Bowl team to me, but they feel like a team that could upset one of the 7 or 8 teams, potentially if things went right, as that team was knocked out and is a better team. Dallas can beat anybody in this league. They really can. I saw them play Tampa. I saw CeeDee Lamb and Amari Cooper make big plays. And Amari's going to be better in 3 weeks than he is today. But all this complaining, this is December football. This is what it looks like, especially in a short week on the road missing coaches. Here's Dak after.
And it's frustrating on my part. I think just being greedy in some of the reads, trying to put the dagger in them, I guess you can say, rather than just continuing to play through the play and play through the drive. I was trying to do it on one play, and I can't do that. We can't do that as an offense, and we've just got to stay within it and allow that play to come.
Yeah, was not pretty. Dak is rarely pretty. He's effective. He wins. The intangibles are great. He's not that pretty. That's not how he plays. Brian Kelly, former Notre Dame coach, he is getting clobbered today, and I want to talk about it because it's parts funny and parts pandering and parts embarrassing, but we'll talk about it.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
The compact GLA proves it's not the size of the SUV in the fight. It's the size of the fight in the SUV. Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. So we are, let's be honest, cynical. They do studies every year on the media and how they're similar to you, the public, and how we are different. We drink more than you do. We go to church less than you do. We are more cynical than you are. The stuff that we deeply care about, you really don't. There are similarities. But there's a lot of differences, and I always try to think about that when I do a show. I do topics that are easy to understand. We can put our arms around. We can argue over. And I don't ever want to be like cynical guy, although I think it's in me because of my profession. So Brian Kelly's a great football coach, period. And he has a much greater chance to succeed at LSU, probably, than Marcus Freeman, who I think will do very well at Notre Dame. But he's never been a coach, and Notre Dame's a hard place to coach. And next year, their schedule, they open up at Ohio State. And Brian Kelly's got a better chance to succeed at LSU, arguably, than Marcus Freeman does at Notre Dame. My guess is they both succeed. But Brian Kelly, like all college football coaches, is a politician and a psychologist and a recruiter and a salesman and a mentor. And he's also a really good football coach. He's a good teacher. Last night, he had a cringe-worthy moment. It may have been a couple of days ago. So when he got the job at LSU, he was speaking to the basketball fans. And Brian's from the North. All his jobs have been Northern. But you know, you get around those Southerners, and you have a bourbon or two. And I've done this more than once in my life. And about two bourbons in, around a bunch of Southerners, you start saying y'all a little bit more. And he took it to the hilt. Here's Brian Kelly a couple days ago as the new LSU coach.
Well, this is a great way to get started. And I haven't even won all my games yet. It's a great night to be a Tiger. I'm here with my family, and we are so excited to be in the great state of Louisiana, but more importantly, to be with you great fans and to be part of what is going to be an incredible ride here at Louisiana State University.
Yeah, it's pretty cringeworthy. It's pretty funny. And he's being predictably mocked on the internet. It's cringy. Here's the first thing. LSU fans don't care. College football means a lot in the South. I always laugh when I see a New Yorker or a Boston media person try to tell Southerners how to think about their sport. Oh, how adorable. You have no idea. It matters a lot to them. And Brian wanted to connect with them and make them feel important. As the term goes, the saying goes, it matters more here. Yes, it was cringeworthy, but college football coaches pander all the time. One of the great college football coaches of all time is Barry Switzer. I had him on my show years ago at the other place. He's a riot, by the way. He's laugh out loud funny. And he's brutally authentic and honest. He told me that one time he was recruiting a great, great player in Oklahoma, and he went into the alley next to the house and opened up the garbage can to see if there were any clues on what the family consumed. There was a certain beer there. It was like Pearl or Lone Star. Then he closed it and went inside the house to seal the deal. And when they asked what kind of beer he liked, he said, "Oh, I love that Pearl beer is my very favorite. It's the only thing I'll let the staff drink." He, of course, had never had one. But they signed the player. You know, when Tiger Woods had an affair, some of you were moralists and were outraged. You know he's not the first golfer to do it, just the first you heard about that you loved. This happens every day in college football. Ma'am, that apple pie is the best I've ever had. And then you ask yourself to go to the bathroom and throw up. I've had coaches tell me they play the game. Sometimes it's uncomfortable, but you want to make people feel important. The mom, the dad, the kid. Mark Richt told me multiple times. I said, don't you get tired of recruiting? He said, really, it's just love. You got to tell the kid, I love you more than the guy that follows you in the house. Yes, this was completely cringeworthy. We sat and laughed as we watched it. But every rock musician stands on that stage as they travel around the country. And that grab that microphone, that rock musician says, nobody rocks like Omaha, except everybody. And comedians change their act. Oh, they do when they go from talking to college campuses to the corporate gig. Suddenly you don't pick on the big and the powerful. You're being paid by them. Go to a party. Want to be popular? Ask people about themselves. Really, I'd love to see more pictures of your kids. Fascinating. Really, keep going. Your vacation last year. I couldn't talk about it more. You want to make people feel important? Yes, it was pandering. Yes, it was completely, utterly cringeworthy. And Brian's probably embarrassed. But you know who's not, maybe? A lot of those LSU fans. Because they want to feel important. And that's important. Not saying what he did is right. I'm saying you just don't know how the game is played. That accent is happening from northern coaches going to recruit southern parents every day of the year. Every day of the year. You just don't see it on the internet. Joy with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
It's called Easy Applause Guy.
Hey, I'm not saying.
How's everybody doing tonight? Give yourselves a round of applause. You look beautiful.
Oh, this audience is beautiful.
Who's had some wine? Yeah, you host a couple events. You'll read the room pretty quickly.
That's exactly what it's called.
It's Easy Applause Guy.
Read the room.
Yeah. So not too long ago, the Rams were 7-1 and added Von Miller and Odell Beckham to an already stacked roster and looked like a Super Bowl contender. But now they're on a 3-game losing streak and are hoping to get back in the win column. And they host the Jaguars on Sunday. Turnovers have been a big issue for them, obviously, during this stretch. And Andrew Whitworth said they need to make a conscious effort to take care of the football. He said it's less about the rah-rah stuff and all the narratives surrounding the struggles, and it's more about execution, which I like to hear. And Whitworth is obviously a tremendous player and a veteran and
yeah.
Knows the difference between a great speech, a easy applause guy speech, and let's maybe tighten up on how we're carrying the ball.
Right.
But Stafford has played a significant role in that. 3 pick sixes.
Yeah.
He's thrown a pick six in each of their last 3 losses.
Yeah.
And they've turned the ball over 7 times during that stretch. And while things are not looking great, we can add some more bad news because Odell's status for Sunday is up in the air due to a hip injury.
He looked in the last game. He looked like he couldn't jump. He limped to the sideline.
He has a hip pointer, yeah. So they said it's not anything serious, but he might miss this game. He's missed 13 games due to injury during his time with the Browns, including the playoffs, and he was inactive week 9 this season before being released. So they're 12.5-point favorites against Jacksonville, according to Fox Bet, at home this Sunday. I anticipate they will win this game. They are obviously the better team with more talent.
I will say this, though. I have, in a weird way, bad football can still be interesting, and the Jags are interesting because I think the Urban Meyer story is fascinating. I think the Trevor Lawrence story is fascinating. So I have watched more bad Jaguars football, and what's surprising, Joy, is about every third week, they come out and play well.
Yeah.
Now, Seattle, they were awful. But I watched them lead Arizona at half. I saw them play Denver tight. I've seen them win a football game. So, they're about due for as well as they can play. It's a slow football team. They need speed. They're about due for a competitive game.
Well, we talked about this a lot this year, that this is kind of a year of parity. The bottom of the league is not that bad. Even the worst team in the league is in games every single week in the Lions.
Yeah.
So even if people are struggling, they're still interesting. There's still storylines around every single team. And the top of the league has issues as well. So I'm interested in this game. If for nothing else, the Rams, similar to the Cowboys last night, need to get a convincing win. So how are they going to look? If Odell can't play, can they overcome that? Everyone's dealing with injuries at this point in the season, but the Rams really need to get it back on the tracks, because that's a game you have to win against Jacksonville. So good news for the Cardinals, a team that was rolling and then started dealing with injuries. Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins have missed the last three games for Arizona. Kyler's been recovering from an ankle sprain, and Hopkins was working away back from a hamstring injury. So they're both limited in practice on Thursday, but they are reportedly expected to play against the Bears on Sunday, barring any setbacks.
I will say this. They're my second best team in the league. I love watching them play, and I think Colt McCoy is a terrific backup. But more than anything, as a consumer, I just miss those two playing, because I think it's the most interesting team in the league to watch.
Totally agree.
I feel the same way about the Phoenix Suns.
Yes.
I feel they're the most interesting.
Something in Arizona right
there's
now.
There's something in the air. I feel like when I watch the Phoenix Suns, I'm like, I think it's the best team in the league, but I think they're the most fun to watch
they're
for me.
They're just exciting. They're electric. They're fast.
Athletic and twitchy.
Big plays. Yeah. Yes. And the Cardinals went 2-1 without Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins, which is exactly what you want.
Oh, my God.
From
you can't.
Your backup quarterback.
You can't ask for more.
And so hopefully, well, Hopkins wasn't on the field during the open part of practice today, so he'll speak to the media after practice. Kyler was at practice, but they're trending towards playing this Sunday, and the Cardinals are 7.5-point favorites, according to Fox Bet.
Yeah.
So we got an answer on this story. The NFL announced that Antonio Brown and two other players have been suspended for three games for violating COVID protocols. It'd be so nice if we could just stop talking about COVID protocols.
Now, did they have a fake ID or something, or a fake card?
Fake card, yes.
I didn't
follow it. So the league and the players union found that Brown, as well as Bucks backup safety Mike Edwards and free agent wide receiver John Franklin, had misrepresented their vaccination statuses. So that means that they had fake vaccination cards.
Okay, so Aaron Rodgers just fibbed to us.
Yes, the team knew that he was unvaccinated.
Yeah, so I think
the team and his players and everyone in the building knew he was unvaccinated. That didn't stop him from breaking other protocols.
Right, but when Aaron fibbed to us, it doesn't matter. It's what you told the Packers.
No, I don't care if you lie to the media. It doesn't. Who cares? We get lied to all the time. It doesn't matter. We're not the keepers of truth.
Yeah.
There's extreme value in lying to the media sometimes. So I don't care about that. But the team did know that he was unvaccinated.
Yeah.
In this situation,
they didn't.
Right. Now, apparently they are now all vaccinated. And the story is that Brown brought a fake vaccination card with him to training camp. After he got there, someone told him he could get in trouble for that. So then he made the decision to get vaccinated. That's what the report is. And they are all, according to Jeremy Fowler, now vaccinated and admitted to the wrongdoing in the investigation process, so they cooperated with the investigation.
And they're still alive with being vaccinated. They're still alive, and they're all.
Yeah, I mean, I'm boosted. I haven't grown my horn yet.
Okay.
I'm waiting for it though, because I am a unicorn, so I feel like I should represent myself. You know, in that light.
I'm being cynical. I'm being a cynical.
No, I mean this is ridiculous. And then the story came out again. It was Antonio Brown not paying somebody, and so they decided to go to the media, and now the NFL investigated it, and it turns out that it's true. Like, the NFL and the NFLPA agreed on it, so they did misrepresent their vaccination statuses. Don't make fake vaccination cards. Don't do it. Like, I actually have respect for players who have come out and said, I'm not vaccinated. Don't want to explain why. I'm going to play without being vaccinated. And that's that. And then you move forward. No matter what any Reddit board or your uncle or your crazy cousin has told you, there is no vaccine mandate. There is no vaccine jail.
Yeah.
And if you are an NFL player and an NBA player, for that matter, you do not have to be vaccinated to play. You don't. It is a lie. Let it go. Sometimes you've been lied to. It's a fantasy.
Yeah.
You can play without being vaccinated.
Now, it's harder because all the protocols.
Yes, but it's not a law.
Right.
It's not a rule.
Yeah.
You absolutely have a choice, as you should, whether you want to be vaccinated or not. But if you're not vaccinated, you have to follow different protocols.
Yeah.
And since it's not your league, that's how it goes.
Yeah.
There's lots of rules that we don't like following. Doesn't mean we can't do it if we want to work.
I don't like the speed limit.
It's not my favorite.
I don't like
it. But listen, that's how it goes. So they follow the protocols.
Yeah.
They don't have to be vaccinated, and they're out there on Sunday. Now, yeah. One of them might miss a playoff game, or there's been guys that have missed time this year, and you get your public response, and then you move forward. So if you're bringing a fake vaccination card,
yeah.
You're doing it because A, you don't want to deal with the backlash from your teammates,
yeah.
or the media and public, or B, you don't want to follow the protocols. Mm. That's it. So it's completely selfish, yeah. because you don't have to be vaccinated to play.
Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Peter King now joining us. NBCSports.com, Football Morning in America, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz. You know, I was saying earlier, you can be really, really smart, but you buy your own press, you get stubborn. Smart people make mistakes. It happens all the time. Bill Belichick this offseason was humbled, and he'd had multiple whiffs in the draft, and he kind of handed his drafting stuff back to the draft guys, and they had a terrific draft. Barrymore's great. Ramondre Stevenson's great. Mac Jones been great. And it's okay. What you don't want to do is double down on wrong. You don't get rigid, because smart people, Warren Buffett's had a lot of stocks that haven't made money. When I watch Taysom Hill and Sean Payton still try to tell me it works, and I'm like, you cannot come from behind quickly with Taysom Hill. I mean, what do you make of this Taysom Hill Saints thing and the money they've promised him? I just don't get it.
Well, you know, I thought a lot about that, Colin. And look, he's got to play well to earn most of that money. So I don't think the contract in itself is horrible. But I do think that a little bit of the contract is feeling like they've jerked Taysom Hill around a little bit and basically signed him and all but promised him that he was going to replace Drew Brees, and then he didn't. That he was going to succeed Drew Brees. And so I've always kind of thought that, look, there's no way around the fact Sean Payton loves this kid. And it's hard. Look, we all have recency bias. It's hard to stick up for Taysom Hill after last night until you realize that he suffered a major finger injury, basically most of what happened to Russell Wilson, that caused him to be out for a month or 3 weeks. And I'm not making excuses here, but I am saying that nobody is that inaccurate as Taysom Hill was last night unless something is really wrong. So I just don't think you should make any hard and fast conclusions on Taysom Hill based on one game last night.
So I looked at your top 10. It looks a lot like mine, to be honest, almost down the line. I've been saying this with the Packers, is I think it's the best team Aaron's ever had. The year he won the Super Bowl, they were 26th in rushing. They were a sixth seed. And that team, when they had injuries, and they had a lot of them that year, lost games. This Packer team not only has injuries, they're missing stars, and they're beating Arizona on the road. I think it's the most talented Packer team Aaron's ever had. That's my takeaway. You're more of a historian. What's your thought?
Well, when I talked to Matt LaFleur after the game last Sunday, one of the things he said is, you got to look at all the guys on defense we have who are playing well who nobody talks about.
Yeah.
Devondre Campbell, for instance. Dean Lowry on the defensive front, for instance. Both have had outstanding years. That is why they can cope with the losses of Za'Darius Smith and Jair Alexander. And look, we all know by now that no matter what level of receiver Aaron Rodgers is playing with, he's going to play well on offense. So they're going to have enough on offense. It's the defense that has been the difference.
Are you surprised? The biggest game of the week, I think, is Buffalo and New England. It'll be part of my Blazing 5 picks. I do like the Bills. Are you surprised? I am surprised with Mac Jones. I thought fairly low ceiling. I thought he landed in a great spot. Belichick, McDaniel, the O-line. There's a lot of things here to like about New England. We're not asking him to be Justin Fields and run for his life because if it's a bad O-line. We're not asking him to do that. Are you surprised, though, and do you think New England, Peter, is perhaps a little surprised by how quickly he's been this effective?
I think they're a little bit surprised at that, Colin, no question about it. I think what they are surprised about, and the people I talk to around the league, his play under pressure. And I don't mean big games.
Right.
I mean when he faces a significant rush. The first series of the game last weekend against Tennessee, when you look at how he played going down the stretch of that drive. You know, he had two blitzers coming at him. He was at about the 20, and he got the ball off for an 8 or 10 yard gain. And then when he finally hit Kendrick Bourne for the touchdown in the corner of the end zone, he had, I think, Harold Landry coming right down the barrel at him, and he knew he was going to take a hit. Those are the things that you don't really know until you get a guy in-house. Is he willing to take that big hit? When you play at Alabama with that talent on the offensive line and that edge in the talent base, you don't always see that. Now he comes to New England. They have a good offensive line, but it's not the best in the league. And now you watch this guy, and I love how he performs when people are down his throat.
Do you think if we, if you privately ask people in the Rams building, they're 7-4, Stafford's had a lot of mistakes, he's always been talented, but as the team now has had running back injuries, they're becoming more reliant on Stafford. And Peter, he has struggled a lot with a lot of mistakes. And they gave up stuff for him. They're still paying for Goff and Stafford, and they gave up draft picks. You think privately they're a little disappointed in what it's looked like? A little?
Not yet. Because if you look at the last 3 weeks, okay, Tennessee comes in as one of the two or three hottest teams in football with the kind of power rush that really the Rams are vulnerable to. Next week, it's at San Francisco. For some reason, the Niners have the Rams number.
Yep.
And the Niners desperately needed that game. The Rams didn't. And then, I mean, who's going to go to Green Bay on a really cold day? And who's going to go and play really well? Now, they didn't play very well. But I think what is getting pretty much of a pass, and I do think that Stafford deserves some blame. But I'll tell you, the defense is getting a little bit of a pass here, Colin. You know, we haven't seen the kind of dominating performances that you would think you'd have at least occasionally from an Aaron Donald, Jalen Ramsey-led defense.
Yeah.
That, to me, is as bothersome as what has happened to Stafford the last 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah, you know what happens, Peter? When you win in New York or L.A., you become a glamour franchise. Their staff has been picked apart in Los Angeles. Every year they lose people. You lose a Zach Taylor. You lose a Staley. And all of a sudden you wake up. You don't always hit on those replacements. So I think you're right. I think they've been picked. And I think it. You can see it. I mean, Nick Saban's a prime example of it. He gets picked every year off the and all of a sudden you look up this year and Alabama doesn't look like the same team. So I want to talk an interesting team. I don't know if they'll make the playoffs, but it is fascinating, Peter. 9 teams, in my opinion, will need a quarterback last year. I won't count Atlanta because Matt's going to play, although I do think they could draft somebody. 9 teams will need a quarterback. It's not a great college quarterback draft, and I think Aaron stays in Green Bay, and my guess is Russell stays in Seattle. Jimmy Garoppolo is playing well, and they have Trey Lance, and I told the staff this morning, we talked about this, and I said, they're going to get something for Jimmy Garoppolo. There's 9 teams that need a quarterback. Just ad-libbing this, not to throw you out there on a weird topic, but I look at them and I think to myself, this Jimmy Garoppolo thing, they're going to get a big pick for that. There is desperation all over this league at quarterback.
I think that's a great possibility of what could happen. But if Jimmy Garoppolo continues to play the way he is right now, I don't think the Niners are going to trade him. I don't. I think the Niners will keep him. Because one thing Kyle Shanahan knows, what has ruined 3 of his first 5 seasons as an NFL head coach? The quarterback and quarterback depth. And I just don't think that the value that they would get back, even if they got the 12th pick in the draft for Garoppolo, let's say, I don't think that value is going to mean anything a year from now if Trey Lance goes out and he's not what they thought he was. And that's why until Trey Lance gives them no reason to be hesitant, I think they stay with Garoppolo. And Colin, about your early points, I think Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers both are very much in doubt. I'm not saying that they'll both go or either one of them will go, but I just don't think it's possible on December 3rd or whatever date it is today. I don't think it's possible to have a great feel for what each guy is going to do. I would say that if I were to guess right now, I think at least one of them will be in a different place in 2022.
Well, we're in the interesting business. That would be fascinating. We need to fill segments. If one of those guys leaves, it's going to give us a great offseason. Peter King, have a great weekend, Peter. Thank you. NBCSports.com.
Thank you, Colin.
You bet.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
He's Mike Carmen. I'm Dan Byer. We have a brand new fantasy football podcast called I Want Your Flex. Twice a week, every Tuesday and Friday, we come up with new episodes to not only look back at what happened, what you need to do at that minute, and also look ahead of what's coming up in the fantasy football world.
That's right, Dan. Every week we're going to scour the waiver wire to find the pickups to turbo boost your fantasy lineup, sits, starts, fantasy football players' rankings to get you ready to dominate the competition.
Listen to I Want Your Flex with Mike Harmon and me, Dan Byer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.
A lot of times I don't engage in an argument because I simply don't buy the premise of the argument. It's a straw man argument. You're making it up. It doesn't really exist. Here's another example of that. There is a website, a tweet called Religion of Sports that asks the question, why do so many people hate Tom Brady? To which Tom Brady and his massive social media following answered, great question. Why do so many people hate Tom Brady? I do not buy the premise. There is no proof that people hate Tom Brady. In October, 23 years in the league, he led the league in merch sales. We're still buying his stuff. You don't buy stuff from people you hate. Also, his Super Bowls are many of the most watched ever, including the Seahawks-Patriots Super Bowl is the most watched Super Bowl ever. You don't usually watch what you hate. Tom Brady's unique. He sells sandwiches, yet doesn't eat bread. He sells rental cars and doesn't rent cars. Why do advertisers love Tom? Because you do. Don't confuse envy and jealousy with hate. Envy and jealousy are about fear. They've done studies on that. People fear what's pulling away from them, which they can't relate to, that has more power than them. People are jealous, some, of Tom. Not that many. People envy Tom, the supermodel wife and the unbelievable life. They don't hate him. You don't hate what you buy, hate what you watch, hate what you consume. I do not buy the premise. And for the record, we love a lot of athletes in America, and we're indifferent to a lot of them, too. I don't buy that you hate LeBron either. He remains number one or two in the NBA, in road attendance, everywhere he goes. I think Steph Curry, to me, has surpassed him in the likability. And there's a lot of, you know, ripping LeBron James on the internet. It is not coincidentally often conservative sites and conservatives who rip him. It's a political thing. But I do think he does have some detractors. I was told for years that everybody hates Jim Harbaugh. And then last week, I watched the Michigan-Ohio State game. It got the biggest rating of the year in college football, biggest rating for a regular season game in years. And 49 of the 50 states were rooting for Jim Harbaugh because you were tired of Ohio State, proving you hated Ohio State last weekend more than Jim Harbaugh. So I don't think we hate Brady. I think people confuse jealousy and envy with hate. Jealousy and envy is all about fear. Google it. It's not about hate. You fear something. You fear people are pulling away from you, or they have power over you, or you can't beat them. Nobody, there's no reason to hate Brady. 23 or 24 years in the public sphere. Find me the arrogance. It's unbelievable. The average loser on Twitter with 9 followers thinks he's Elon Musk. Brady's got a virtually perfect life, and he is overwhelmingly humble, grateful, and gracious. every time. I did an interview with him this year, a few months ago. It's remarkable how thoughtful he is with people. Even when people are blabbing and going on and wasting his time, remarkably grateful and humble, which generally points to parenting. He had good parents. All right, our Blazing Five, top of next hour. Some would call it Blase Five after last week, but we had been in a roll for a couple of weeks previously, and I can't wait for it as we pivot into hour two. People are making fun of Brian Kelly. Boy, Brian, stay off the internet for the weekend. Hour two next.